I'd like to call to order the State Administration and Technology Appropriations Subcommittee. Amara, please call the roll.
Chair Stevenson?
Here.
Vice Chair Maggard?
Here.
Ranking Member Goff Marcel?
Here.
Representatives Borrero?
Here.
Duggan?
Here.
Fisher? Gillenbaro?
Here.
Henson?
Here.
Hunchowski?
Here.
Killebrew? Coster?
Here.
Oberdorf?
Yes.
Robinson?
Here.
Toledo? Woodson?
Yeah.
A quorum is present, Madam Chair.
Thank you. A quorum being present, I want to welcome everyone to the State Administration and Technology Appropriations Subcommittee. Please make sure that cell phones and other communication devices are turned off or on silent mode. Take my own advice there. I also kindly ask everyone to follow the House COVID-19 protocols and keep your mask on. House policies require individuals making presentations to the committee to keep their mask on throughout the presentation, and I thank you for being already prepared for that. Members, today we will have the governor's budget recommendations for fiscal 2021-22 to be presented. The presentation will be led by Lori Grizel, Policy Coordinator of the General Government Unit, or GGU, as I'm learning the lingo, in the Governor's Office of Policy and Budget. Ms. Grizel will also be joined by several of the Governor's agency heads. Following the Governor's presentation, we will hear from Jamie Grant, our new State Chief Information Officer, who once served on this committee. CIO Grant will update us on state technology issues and the implementation of the IT reorganization bill from last session. We're going to go right into the governor's budget presentation. The presentation materials are in the online package and will also be on the screens. I encourage you to please listen carefully. We will take questions once the presentation is completed. Ms. Grizel, you are recognized to begin your presentation.
Good afternoon, Chair Stevenson, members. I'm Lori Grizel. I'm the Policy Coordinator of the General Government Unit within the Governor's Office of Policy and Budget. And today I'm here with the leadership of some of our agencies to present highlights of Governor DeSantis's Florida Leads budget recommendations for general government agencies. I would like to thank both the office and the staff in the Office of Policy and Budget, as well as the staff in all of our agencies, for their hard work to put together the Governor's Florida Leads recommended budget. We look forward to working with you and your staff throughout the budget process. The agencies that fall under the general government policy area for this committee are Department of Business and Professional Regulation, Department of Lottery, Department of Management Services, Florida Digital Service, Division of Administrative Hearings, Commission on Human Relations, Public Employee Relations Commission, Department of Financial Services, Office of Financial Regulation, Office of Insurance Regulation, Department of Revenue, and the Public Service Commission. This chart presents an overall picture of the Florida Leads budget by policy area. First, all funds of $96.6 billion, and then general revenue only of $35.8 billion. The total proposed budget for the agencies in the general government area under the purview of this committee is $2.3 billion. The budget for these agencies is mostly trust funded, meaning that their budgets are funded by dedicated revenue streams. General revenue represents only 14% of the recommended budget. This chart shows the recommended budget for general government agencies compared to the current year appropriation. The overall budget is $172 million more than current year. This includes both new issues recommended for funding as well as reductions proposed. The overall decrease in positions is 71, and all of these proposed decreases are in positions that are currently vacant. The reductions included in the Florida LEADS budget total $98 million for the current year appropriations and $29 million for the fiscal year 21-22 budget year. These reductions are in savings through bonding, administrative and operational efficiencies proposed by agencies that would have minimal impact, and contract and lease savings. And now to present highlights of the Florida LEADS budget for the Department of Business and Professional Regulation, we have the Chief of Staff, Thomas Philpott.
Mr. Philpott, you're recognized. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Stevenson and members. I'm Thomas Philpott again on behalf of the Department of Business and Professional Regulation. I have four issues related to the department that are featured in the Governor's Florida LEADS budget recommendations to highlight here today with you. As you see in your slide or in your packet, those issues include 42,000 for the Professional Board's legal services contract. As you may know, Florida law requires the department to retain and provide counsel for our appointed professional and occupational licensing boards to support them in their rule development, their meetings, license discipline matters, and litigation and other functions that they're tasked with under Florida law. And this funding here would support some needs that we have to complete kind of the costs and expenses on that contract, which hasn't been adjusted since 2014. The second issue is related to the network and computer security at the department, $293,780 for some tools to strengthen our security on our network. In particular, the three areas of focus the department has. One is user authentication, how our users access and actually get authorized to access resources on our system. The second, as you know, we have a substantial mobile workforce with our responsibilities in the field, inspecting and investigating matters at licensed premises. And so some of the tools as part of this package would enhance our mobile endpoint protections for the mobile devices the department's staff uses in those exercises, and also expanding some of our workstation-based, actual computer desktop-based threat detection tools that we currently have seen to be effective in a piloted population of our staff that we'd like to expand across the remaining users in the department. The third issue relates to our general counsel's office, a competitive pay adjustment to attract and retain qualified and experienced attorneys and senior attorneys in an amount of $361,436. Our Office of General Counsel has taken a careful analysis of some retention issues that we've seen among our attorney and senior attorney positions and compared average salaries at the department to other similarly situated position classes at other departments. Based on that analysis, our attorney positions rank around 8 out of 15 other agencies, and our senior attorneys are 25th out of 26 other state agencies that have a similar class code employed for their counsel positions. And so this is a critical matter for us to retain these attorney positions, not just for their subject matter knowledge in the particular areas that they're tasked with at the department, but also for efficiency with a rising caseload that we have seen over the past couple of years at the department. And the last issue you're likely familiar with from prior fiscal years, this is $165,460 for a variety of law enforcement acquisition and replenishment of law enforcement equipment and some specialized training for our law enforcement officers that are part of our Division of Alcoholic Beverages and Tobacco at the department. And Chair Stevenson, that concludes my highlights of these four issues for the department today. Be happy to entertain questions at your discretion.
Yeah, we're going to do questions at the end. So
thank
you very much for your presentation.
To present highlights of the Florida Leeds budget for Department of Lottery, we have Secretary John Davis.
Welcome, Secretary Davis. You're recognized to present your highlights.
Thank you. Chair Stevenson, Vice Chair Maggart, Ranking Member Golf Marcel, and members of the subcommittee, thank you for this opportunity to present today on Governor DeSantis' Florida Leeds budget. I appreciate the governor appointing me to serve as Secretary of the Florida Lottery. I'm pleased and I'm honored to lead our mission of maximizing revenue to enhance education. In my role, I love the fact that every single day I get to bring my passion and dedication to this business enterprise. And as a former athlete, business executive, and entrepreneur with immense sales experience, I share the same competitive edge that has propelled the lottery's success. But I also know that there's always room for growth, and we must continue to innovate to meet the needs of consumers. And without growth and forward thinking, we run the risk of stagnation and being left behind as a business. Now, before I get into the highlights of our budget request, I'd like to share just a few notable facts. This fiscal year, we've already transferred $1 billion to education, which brings us to 19 consecutive years of transfers of $1 billion to the Education Enhancement Trust Fund. That equals approximately $5.8 million a day to education, and more than $38 billion since inception. My team and I, we also take great pride in being one of the most efficient lotteries in the nation. And we currently operate on less than 1% of revenue. We are completely self-funded from ticket sales, and we do not, I repeat, we do not receive any general revenue funding. And for every dollar that's appropriated in our budget, more than $10 are transferred to education. In the governor's budget, the lottery is funded at $193.9 million with 418 and a half full-time employees. Now, here are the highlights of our budget request. First, an increase for the ticket vendor fees. The governor budget provided an additional $5.5 million recurring dollars for ticket vendors. This request is presented each year and is based on ticket sales. For every $1 of lottery ticket sales, about 1.4 cents goes to pay our ticket vendor fees. The rate paid to vendors for the sale of tickets has not changed. However, when sales increase, vendor fees increase, as well as the transfer to education also increases. The rate to Our second request provides $250,000 in non-recurring dollars to support a statutorily required independent security audit that's conducted every 2 years that evaluates all aspects of our physical and data security. Our next request provides $130,000, $90,000 of which is non-recurring, to begin implementing and transitioning our primary data center infrastructure securely to the cloud. Now, this is the first step to implementing a 3 to 5 year cloud-based strategy that aligns with the governor in the legislature cloud first policy. A fourth request provides $110,000 non-recurring dollars to evaluate the feasibility of maintaining our existing prize payment system or purchasing a new system. The current payment prize system was developed internally by our staff more than 10 years ago. This business case will provide the governor, legislature, and the lottery an independent assessment for determining the future of our prize payment system. And our final request provides $82,200 non-recurring dollars to replace the interior security cameras at our headquarters building that are over 25 years old and are no longer covered by a maintenance contract. In conclusion, I'd like to thank the governor for his continued support of the lottery as highlighted in his Florida Leads budget. I'd also like to thank each of you for giving us the opportunity to present here today. Thank you.
Thank you, Secretary Davis, and I appreciate you'll be here for questions at the end.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
To present highlights of the Florida Leads budget regarding Department of Management Services is Secretary Jonathan Satter.
You're recognized, Secretary Satter.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon, Chairman and members of the committee. Today, I am happy to present Governor DeSantis' Florida Leads budget recommendations for the Department of Management Services as we work together to serve Florida. Before jumping into the governor's recommendations, earlier this month, actually at the beginning of January, I announced that I would be stepping down as secretary. I would like to thank Governor DeSantis, Lieutenant Governor Nunez, and so many of you for your support over the past 2 years during my tenure at DMS. As I close my service in this capacity, I believe our team has made significant strides in creating efficiencies, leveraging technology, and providing excellent customer service to our nearly 3 million customers. Governor DeSantis' Florida Leads budget invests over $893 million to support our agency's workforce, business, and technology operations. The total budget and number of FTEs includes those entities which are administratively housed within DMS. These include the Florida Commission on Human Relations, PERC, the Public Employee Relations Commission, and State Employee Leasing. Moving into the recommendations, DMS is the primary agency responsible for significant capital construction projects. Given Florida's strong AAA credit rating and the current and projected interest rates in the commercial debt markets, the Florida Leads budget includes $172 million in bonding capacity to support the hardening of critical infrastructure, accessibility, development, and modernization of the Florida facilities pool. As recommended, this proposal would save $55 million in general revenue currently allocated to the department. The projects include $49 million to construct a new state emergency operations center, $38 million to improve accessibility and the long-term structural integrity of Waller Park here at the Capitol, $75 million to replace the Capitol's windows and HVAC with more resilient options, which have not been replaced since opened in 1972. Finally, the bonding proposal includes $10 million to modernize current office space by restacking these footprints to support a 21st century mobile workforce. The Florida Leads budget also supports an additional $12.1 million in projects for fixed capital outlay needs in our real estate portfolio. The safety and security of Floridians is a top priority of the administration, which is reflected in the $15 million investment for local emergency communications. These E911 programs will increase interoperability between communities and improve emergency response throughout the state. As the lead agency charged with operating the state law enforcement radio system, the budget includes $951,000 to replace the state's SLRS logging recorders. This is a critical investment and is used by the Florida Highway Patrol regional communications centers when responding to the immediate needs of residents, businesses, and visitors. Now more than ever, we're seeing the important role that technology plays in supporting government operations and response. To support this, the governor recommends $14.7 million to support immediate and long-term improvements to our department's technology systems. These include systems that serve our retirees, state employees, and vendors looking to do business with state government. As the administrator of the state group insurance program, we understand the importance of finding opportunities to save money as healthcare costs continue to rise, while also ensuring quality and accessible care. The governor's budget includes $375,000 to assist early retirees who may be eligible for Social Security disability health coverage in transitioning to federally paid health coverage options. Finally, the Florida LEADS budget includes directives to broaden current telehealth coverage for our state group health plan members for both primary and specialty care, including mental health services. This approach supports more innovative healthcare delivery options. Thank you for all your continued support of DMS. I know our team stands ready to implement these investments over the next year. At this point, I'd like to turn it over to Jamie Grant, our state CIO, to highlight our recommendations included in the Florida LEADS budget for the Florida Digital Service.
Thank you, Secretary.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Secretary, for your introduction. More importantly, thank you for your friendship, your partnership, and your leadership of the department. You have been a tremendous partner from the day I was entrusted by you to serve here, and know that you will be missed, and I hope this committee understands that there are big shoes to fill at the department, but that the team stands ready. It is my honor, Madam Chair, members, to be back in the People's House to talk with you about the Florida LEADS budget and the priorities from the Florida Digital Service. There are four items that you will see. The first one is the Office of the State CIO, an item to update the funding methodology. And while I would tell you from a budget perspective that this is neutral, I would tell you from a mission and operational perspective, it is mission critical. Your staff director, your team can well highlight for you the challenges historically with Florida's technology office under different names. I would respectfully submit to each of you that one of the biggest challenges has been the alignment of the economic relationship between that office and agency partners or customers it's intended to serve. The Florida LEADS budget also recommends and puts Governor DeSantis in a position of being a national leader on cybersecurity. I think anybody who is paying attention to the news or the events in this arena can certainly understand the critical need to focus. This recommendation inside of the Florida LEADS budget by Governor DeSantis represents really the state's first significant commitment to cybersecurity and resiliency, understanding the digital wars that are happening all around us on an ongoing basis. The next item that's in the governor's LEADS budget is automation as a service. Major hat tip to Secretary Satter, who you just heard from. Interesting kind of use case that occurred over, I'll call it the last 3 or 4 years. Prior to being upgraded, District 64 was represented by myself. You now have a much more talented and intelligent representative, Representative Koster, sitting back there. But during my time in this body, we continued to try and see automation make its way into government agencies. Perhaps one silver lining of the pandemic is that it is enabled risk takers and problem solvers to take more risk than otherwise would happen. During the pandemic, Secretary Satter actually deployed robotic process automation with a team to significantly enhance the response time and remediation of claims going on. What you have now seen coming out of that is that perhaps several years prior to him deploying it, while we were trying to get secretaries to perhaps look at it, you now have seen people see the success of his leadership and what was put in place at DEO during his time over there, to the point that agencies are now significantly, they're repeatedly asking us for automation as a service. This budget item would actually allow us to enter into, let's say, contractual relationships with those agencies to provide those automation services as needed. And then the last item, the fourth item, is log collection and analysis. The state data center is something that sits inside of the Florida Digital Service. And this line item would actually enhance significantly our ability to do log collection and analysis of data that is housed at the state data center. Madam Chair, I appreciate your time. I appreciate the committee's time and your focus on the Florida LEADS budget. Thank you.
Thank you. I still want to call you Chair Grant. So thank you. Chief, I guess he's Chief Information Officer. Chief, all right. Thank you. I want to note what the extraordinary change we're seeing with a new secretary coming in over the Department of the Lottery. And I want to welcome you and thank you for introducing yourself and for taking up that role. It is big shoes to fill for you as well. You set a high bar, you reported the good reviews, and that's a lot of pressure on you for continued performance. And Secretary Satter, through the last year, we've seen you working very hard to help make things work for the people of Florida, and I'm really grateful for your service. And it was a very dynamic, we saw the changes very dynamically as you worked to meet the surge of needs at DEO, and I appreciate you stepping in there. And we will miss you. I was a little sad, I'm sad to see that you were gonna be gone, but I wanna thank you for your service as well. Thank you.
The Florida LEADS budget for the Department of Financial Services recommends $399 million and 2,565 positions. These numbers include the following entities: the Office of Insurance Regulations budget at $32.4 million and the Office of Financial Regulation budget at $42.5 million. The first item on this slide is $27.9 million for PALM. That's the Planning, Accounting, and Ledger Management System. The state's current accounting and cash management systems were developed in the 1970s. This is a multi-year and multi-phase project to replace those antiquated systems. This funding is for software systems integration, independent verification and validation, and other costs. The cash management system phase is scheduled to go live in July, and the project is scheduled for completion in fiscal year 26-27. Information technology initiatives are recommended at $3.2 million. Some of these projects include transitioning department systems into the new PALM system, continued development and implementation and maintenance of the local government electronic reporting system, and the citizen-facing transparency portal, and upgrading outdated equipment and software. The Florida LEADS budget recommends $5.5 million for law enforcement training. This is for issues such as training for the Division of Investigative and Forensic Sciences and replacing law enforcement equipment and vehicles. And $1 million is recommended for state fire marshal funding. This includes the state urban search and rescue training program and maintenance and repair at the fire college and arson lab. For Department of Revenue, the Florida LEADS budget recommends $606 million and 5,007 positions. First item on this slide is $1.4 million for replacement of the image management system. Funding is for the final year of a three-year project, which will be funded entirely from federal monies. The information management system manages bank deposits and remittance processing related to both the tax and child support systems. The current system was developed over 20 years ago, and portions can no longer receive maintenance. Funding for fiscally constrained counties is recommended at $32.1 million. Florida statutes requires this funding to fiscally constrained counties to offset reductions in ad valorem tax revenue for homestead exemption and conservation lands. Information technology initiatives are recommended at $2.1 million. This includes an evaluation of migrating the child support system to a newer database, cybersecurity enhancements to better protect the sensitive information maintained at the department, and programming updates to various child support e-services and interfaces. Additional property appraisers are recommended at $475,000 and 6 new positions. Additional resources are needed in the Property Tax Oversight Division to produce the required number of appraisals to ensure uniform property taxation by all of the local levying authorities across the state. In fiscal year 1920, the department implemented methodology changes as a result of the Auditor General findings and to more closely align with International Association of Assessing Officer standards, which permanently increases the number of appraisals that the department must perform to reach a statistically reliable conclusion. The fiscal year 21-22 tax year will require 2,210 appraisals, which represents a large increase in residential and commercial property. The department does not currently have sufficient resources to absorb the appraisal workload increase. And the final slide is for a Public Service Commission. The Florida LEADS budget recommends $26.9 million and 271 full-time positions. This is a continuation budget. No new issues are recommended. And that concludes our formal presentation. We'll be happy to take any questions on any of the slides.
Thank you, Ms. Grizel. I had a couple questions I wanted to start. And members, if you, we can try to cluster them under each subject. My first question is regarding the DMS budget. And if you have other questions regarding it, maybe we can try to reduce the amount of exercise each one of the presenters have to get coming up and down. Welcome back, Secretary Satter. as you know, there have been challenges renewing our statewide law enforcement systems contract. Until DMS is able to procure a new long-term contract, the current contract will need to be extended, most likely for upwards of 5 years, is my understanding. I don't believe the governor recommended additional funding for the contract extension. However, I understand you're working on a contract extension. When do you think that we will have something for the legislature to consider on that?
Madam Chair, so I think your question is about the status of the renewal contract. Is that right? Mm-hmm. We've been in discussions with the current provider right now, and those are ongoing. We're hopeful that we'll see a result of those. On the flip side, we recently completed a business case, and we are in putting together the final pieces of a formal procurement. And because we're in the stages of launching that procurement, I can't necessarily go into great detail, but we are in active discussions about a shorter term renewal with the incumbent provider.
Thank you. I guess we're just a little time is growing near, and we just want to make sure we have a contingency plan on that proposal?
There is, and what I can do is, because we've got a lot of people working on this, I can ask some of them to come see you and talk to you and brief you about the calendar of events and what the plan is in terms of our negotiations with that provider.
I appreciate that. Do you expect an amended budget request for that system?
Well, the governor's budget currently includes funding based on the current year contract. Based upon the department's revenue projections and REC estimates, we believe that we have the funding to support the current contract rate for one fiscal year.
I also just wanted to touch base on the revenues that support the SLUR system. Currently, there's a $3 surcharge tied to traffic violations at sunset on June 30th that generates about $4 million annually to help fund SLURs. Does the governor's budget proposal recommend a bill to continue this revenue, to come up with a new revenue stream, or provide additional general revenue to offset the loss of this revenue?
I think over time, in the near future, we're going to have some additional information on the long-term budget needs and discussions as it pertains to a renewal as the discussions with that current vendor progress.
Thank you. I also wanted to, I'm going to change gears a little bit.
Sure.
But I appreciate those updates. It's very important. I want to address the Division of State Purchasing. Did the governor recommend continuing the discounted fee on the Division of State Purchasing?
So the 0.7 versus
yes, for the vendors. Yeah, for the vendors using
I think at this time, because of where we stand with the timing of both the POM project and any needs we had, I think we believe that the 0.7 would be appropriate.
So he didn't want to revert back to the 1%?
I don't think we'd have that need at the current time.
Okay. Members, the state purchasing operations are supported by a 1% fee that was established in rule. Vendors pay to participate and sell goods to state agencies. And as a way to allocate the cost of that system, there's a fee for people who are using the procurement services of DMS.
Madam Chair, I was confused with perhaps a discussion that we had. Because of the need for us to run parallel systems, we have recently awarded a procurement for the next generation My Florida Marketplace plan. We did increase the fee, I'm sorry, to 1.0 so that we could run two systems concurrently.
Excellent.
So I was confused with something else.
I thought that was...
That's why I bring Lori.
But Secretary, I'll just say... You have so many things under your silo, and there's been so much going on this year. I certainly understand. You have a broad, you're under many different types of functions. But he did allow for the fee to revert back to the 1%.
Correct.
So I'll go back to the explanation. So basically, this is in rule, and we've been able to discount it for a number of years. But during this time of transition, we'll be using the budgets. The governor's budget proposal has the 1% in it. Okay, very good. And this will help with funding for the transition to the new system. So thank you. For My Florida Marketplace, another tech project. Right, very, very important. That is all. Those are the questions I have. Did anybody else have a question for Secretary Satter? Representative Robinson.
Thank you, Chair. My question would be under the Florida Digital Service. I just had a question. Can you explain what role the Florida Digital Service will play in creating more usable interfaces between our state agencies and the... Just this side? Okay.
I don't know who would answer the question, but can I say it and you can say? So I've been adding up the overall budget. It sounds like $96.6 billion, $35.8 billion and $2.3 billion for a total of $134.7 billion. Am I correct?
Madam Chair, I think the $96 billion is the total budget. $35 billion is from general revenue. And for this general government silo, our budget for the agencies that have been shown is $2.3 billion of the total.
Of the total, your particular silo is $2.3 billion?
Correct, and that's included in the 96 overall budget.
And the overall budget is $96.6 billion.
Would you like me, Ms. Grizel, to take
sure.
this question, because yeah. it's on the overall budget? Can you go to slide 3?
Yes, so the governor's entire Florida Leads budget, if you look at the what I'm looking at on my left, is $96.6 billion, and you can see the various policy areas, and that is general revenue and then all the various trust funds, including federal funds that go into that. The on the right is a subsection of that showing that for the Florida Leads budget, $35.8 billion is funded from general revenue, and it shows the policy areas that are the big users of general revenue. General government, which is this committee, is not. Then if you look at the next slide, the $2.3 billion is that little tiny, it was that little tiny wedge that was on the previous slide, and those are for the agencies that are under the purview of this committee. And so that is the total proposed budget for all of the agencies. Secretary Satters, if you look at the management services, is that big blue wedge right in the front. So that is the piece that he is presenting, and then all of the other agencies are in other colors.
So, Madam Chair, thank you. Thank you for that explanation. Clearly, the people of Florida are putting a great deal of money in technology. Yet, they are getting mediocre services in some areas. Our unemployment system crashed this past epidemic, during the pandemic when they needed it the most. We just talked about Florida Marketplace. They're having trouble with vaccination appointment systems. Rural communities are having trouble accessing broadband. Are there any of these departments responsible for any of these issues? Maybe digital services, I don't know. And how can we get them corrected, because the people of Florida deserve better? Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Henson, some of those fall under other silos, like the even though Secretary Satter assisted, the Connect system falls under a different committee. But there may be some things in that overall discussion that fall under your purview.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, forgive me. So they're not under this particular budget?
Not Connect. No, it is not under the silo.
There's another budget for Connect.
Yes. Secretary?
Madam Chair, yes. If you'd like to just have a general discussion about technology and within the state, I'd probably defer to our resident expert CIO, Grant.
Okay, all right, very well. Thank you, Secretary Satter.
Thank you.
Is there any, did I miss anybody? Okay. Yeah, he was also for. CIO Grant, do you please? This is our Chief Information Officer, Jamie Grant, who used to be a House member and very engaged in technology, and he does fall under DMS. However, I'll let you talk about it, but this committee isn't over Connect, but for a general discussion of technology questions, I'm sure you heard
Yes, ma'am. Madam Chair, I heard the question, and I'll try and make sure, understanding that the agenda also has an introduction to the Florida Digital Service to explain what the digital service does and does not do. So I think it's largely been stated. Secretary Satter is not responsible for DEO. If anything, I gave kind of kudos. What I meant to kind of compliment is the fact that we had a secretary go outside of his obligations to help serve in the midst of a pandemic, but there is an entirely different budget that would deal with the Department of Economic Opportunity that is not contained within the Department of Management Services, nor is the Florida Digital Service entrusted with any sort of funds that deal with that system.
Thank you. Is there, I think Representative Robinson also may have had a question.
I'm sorry, I can't, if you might, wouldn't mind, turn your microphone on.
Question was going to DEO, and he just fall under this budget, correct?
So your question was about Connect?
Ultimately, yes.
Okay, thank you. Ranking Member Goff-Mercel.
Thank you, Chair, and it's good to see you again, CIO Grant. My question is, it seems like we've tried in the year's recent history to try to get a way to have, attempts to standardize the digital technology between the agencies and being able to connect with the public. And it seems like that's gonna be your job now, is that? Right.
Madam Chair, if I could, I think it might, you've got on the agenda an introduction to the digital service. I think that actually is a topic that we'll kind of dive into probably outside the budget as far as the responsibilities of the digital service. At a high level, this legislature previously required the digital service to deploy an enterprise architecture specifically focused at interoperability. Mm-hmm. So the interoperability of data between agencies would be something inside the digital service.
Excellent. So, follow up? Mm-hmm. Thank you, Chair. So are you, how are you gonna do it differently? Because it hasn't been working in the past.
Could we hang, exactly. I think that the next presentation will get to that.
We have
Jamie gets a doubleheader today. I do have one question.
Yes,
about
ma'am.
This part of the budget discussion. I'm gonna get used to these, this Chief Information Officer grant.
Jamie's just fine, Madam Chair.
The governor has recommended $30 million to address the cybersecurity issues. Do you have a recommendation on how agencies will be provided a portion of the funds or how to best utilize the funds appropriated by the legislature?
Yes, ma'am, we look forward to providing more and more specifics. What I would tell you and the entire committee is that we could very easily build a multi-billion dollar budget from a cybersecurity resiliency perspective.
Yeah.
The reality is, we have to start somewhere, and this governor is the first governor in Florida's history to recognize the cyber war that's happening around us, and to put into budget recommendations this kind of commitment to our cybersecurity. What our team is currently working on right now is multiple budgets that would exceed well beyond the $30 million to accomplish really a number of objectives, and I think the next presentation, the introduction to the digital service, will help in this regard. But what I would stress to this committee and everybody else is there is both the prospective work necessary to make our state more secure, and then there is the reaction to threats that have actually or are actually happening. $30 million would follow on the task force recommendations, as I think you're aware, but the committee may not be. I know Representative Giambardo has expressed significant interest and leadership in the space, with the Cybersecurity Task Force led by our Lieutenant Governor having just wrapped last month and making recommendations. The budget recommendations coming off of that would be the implementation of kind of the highest priority items to secure our state, starting with an inventory. I would stress to this committee that the most significant thing we could do is actually identify what assets we have. So whether it's hardware, whether it's software, whether it's data elements themselves, to be able to answer what we have, where we keep it, what we call it, who owns it or where it moves and where it resides. I would stress that in my first 6 months, I've had a number of crises to manage on the cyber front. And each of those starts with a period of time by which we are asking ourselves, where are these assets? Who actually is the custodian of these assets before we can actually get to the remediation? So an inventory inventory would be significant. And then to kind of tie the bow on the last part of your question, automation as a service, as it's presented to you, is in some regards both year one in how we would provide automation services to other agencies, but also a proof of concept to establish the ability by which the digital service can serve as a center of excellence. So that, as an example, DBPR earlier was talking about multi-factor authentication. They're doing great work to move forward on that front. Presumably, had the state been more serious about the tech office situated the right way, something like the digital service would be able to provide those kind of services on an enterprise scale, so that we don't have each agency having to come request that money or perhaps contract with multiple vendors. And so I would suggest that you will see a number of kind of recommendations in that budget that situate the digital service to serve as a center of excellence, to be able to offer different services to agencies to help them harden their own infrastructure consistent with the enterprise architecture work that's kicking off.
It's certainly a needed and interesting role that you've gotten yourself into. And we're really grateful for the kind of questions that we're hearing are appropriate. Mm-hmm. And I'm glad you're here to present to us today. I also wanted to follow up on the recommendations to fund robotic processing automation as a service. What do you have any specifics on processes that have been identified for automations, and which agencies are asking for these services?
Yes, ma'am. So great question. And this is, members, what I was referencing when we look at, I think maybe where some of the confusion came about Connect and the multiple budgets or the different budgets. So what we actually saw was the life cycle of about 3 or 4 years where Representative Fisher is somebody who's helped lead in this space, but as legislators trying to get agencies to adopt automation and find ways to eliminate unnecessary manual processes to be able to use taxpayer dollars maybe more efficiently. The pandemic hit. Secretary Satter, having gone over to kind of volunteer his time in addition to his work at DMS over at DEO to help support, deployed robotic process automation, which is a tool to eliminate redundant or unnecessary data entry. Meaning, if I have something that needs to be entered in 10 different systems, do I need to have 10 different people entering that into 10 different systems? Or could I have one person managing perhaps an automation process and those another 9 employees be directly servicing constituents of ours? What was kind of fascinating to watch after years of frustration without seeing agencies really adopt automation is that as soon as other agencies started to see what was happening with robotic process automation, they kind of quickly thought that these bots, as you may hear them called, get just kind of automatically plugged in and automation happens. The reality is there's teams that are needed to actually do the business case definition, to actually program the automation, and then to subsequently deploy and manage that automation. The robotic process automation, or the automation as a service that's included in Governor's Rex, represents the ability for us to collaborate with agencies around use cases. I would suggest to you that a number of agencies have expressed interest that the list of use cases, whether it be professional certification documentation, you can imagine the number of agencies that are dealing with the repeated data entry. And so the way that we have proposed it, or the governor proposed it in the governor's leads budget, is to provide some latitude by which the agencies can come to us, ask us for a service to automate a specified use case, and that the funds would be there to provide the resources necessary to complete that automation. Our objective would then be, obviously, to use those resources throughout the enterprise as those use cases get defined by agencies who are bought in and want to collaborate.
So a little interest and to be determined, kind of, for this.
What's that?
A lot of interest and specifics to be determined.
What I would say is that we have defined use cases with interested agencies. I think the kickoff naturally and necessarily would be the resources to say, okay, we now have the resources, we have the buy-in, we have the interest, let's go ahead and document and kick off.
Terrific, thank you.
Yes, ma'am. I'm eligible for parole?
Yes, you're eligible
thank you.
For parole for a few minutes. Ms. Grizel? I had a couple questions for you as for the Department of Revenue, and I apologize. There you go. Although it isn't mentioned in your presentation, I wanted to ask about the fund shift in the Department of Revenue included in the governor's recommendation to reduce the general revenue budget by $7.8 million. in general tax administration and shift salary costs to the operating trust fund. This shift would require Department of Revenue to increase the amount of revenue deducted from the department's distribution to local governments by $7.8 million a year.
Yes.
The Department of Revenue collects local option taxes and other revenues on behalf of local taxing entities and retains the cost of administration from the proceeds to those revenues. Current law in Chapter 212 authorizes the Department of Revenue to retain up to 3% of collections for the administrative cost. Today, I believe the Department of Revenue is retaining less than a quarter of a percent, 0.24%. My question is, what percent of total discretionary surtax proceeds would be retained by the Department of Revenue for administration cost after the $7.8 million increase?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And you explained that perfectly. Right now, the department is authorized to retain 3% of the discretionary surcharges that they collect and then distribute out to all of the counties, but they only retain 0.24%. With the shift that we would be doing, where we would be freeing up general revenue and having the department withhold a little bit more administrative costs from the billions of dollars that they get from discretionary surcharge, this would only take them up to 0.44%. And again, currently they are authorized to retain 3%. They actually did they had an entire study done, and this would take them up to what their actual costs are for running this program. The costs have not changed in 10 years in terms of the amount of money that they get, and they used to, back in 2014, administer 67 different discretionary surcharge taxes throughout the state, and now there are 92 different taxes that they have to collect, 37% increase. It's a very tiny increase, but from a general revenue standpoint, this would free up general revenue for very important statewide priorities and have minimal impact, since it would be spread throughout all of the different municipalities and local taxing districts throughout the state that impose various surcharges.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that explanation. Recovering the cost of the service through that type of fee seems very appropriate. Have you spoken to any local governments about the fiscal impact of this change?
No.
All right. Thank you. I have one other question I wanted to run by you. I see on slide 5, I wanted to ask about the reduction in the governor's budget proposal. On slide 5, I see there is a net reduction of 71 positions. Do you happen to know the dollar amount of those reductions?
Of the, in terms of just the positions,
mm-hmm.
We'll have to calculate that for you. We have them individually, but I haven't added those up.
Okay.
But we will get that information and provide it to you and your staff.
Thank you very much. And I also understand that there are reductions in the governor's budget proposal, reducing current year appropriations. Can you summarize the current year reductions and how you arrived at the reduction amount?
I'm sorry, I'm not quite sure I understand the question.
Just how you arrived at the number.
At the various mm-hmm. reductions throughout, is what we're talking about. Thank you. We have three overall categories. The first one was savings through bonding, and I believe Secretary Satter talked about that. By bonding projects that currently have general revenue appropriated to them, this would free up that general revenue, and that would be $62 million freed up. Then there were various administrative and operational efficiencies proposed by agencies that would have minimal impact. And that's $54 million. And the way we look at that is as part of their legislative budget requests, agencies are required to go through an exercise where they propose various reductions for the current year budget as well as the proposed budget. And then within that, they categorize those as reductions that would have a minimal impact, a moderate impact, and a severe impact. We took reductions that the agencies proposed that would have a minimal impact on operations. And most of those reductions, unless an agency specifically asked that it be recurring, we did as non-recurring, meaning short-term, like just for this year, maybe just for next year, to get through the budget crunch, but then their budget would be back to normal in the out years. And so we only took recurring reductions if that's the way the agency proposed it and that's how they wanted it, because it may be an efficiency where they no longer needed those positions, or they were finished doing something so they no longer needed budget. The final category in terms of reductions is contract and lease savings, and the total of that was $11 million.
So one of the things that I noticed was a reduction of $2.2 million in the lottery's paid advertising budget. I'm a little concerned because of how this might impact the lottery's transfer to the Educational Enhancement Trust Fund. Okay.
And I will explain, but if Secretary wants to jump in and add anything, please come up. That is a non-recurring reduction, and I believe it's just current year, isn't it? And it is the lottery's advertising goes for a variety of things. One subcomponent is for sponsorships of different events that occur. And because of the pandemic, most of those, well, pretty much all those events were canceled in current year. And so that was basically money that they had allocated for that, and they weren't going to be able to spend. Regarding the transfer, as Secretary was saying, I think right now, based on the most recent numbers I was looking at, they are $100 million ahead in terms of transfers, even related to the most recent revenue estimating conference. So the lottery's transfers to education continue to be outstanding.
Thank you. That makes that very clear. It wouldn't drive much revenue because
those events would not happen.
Gotcha. Okay, thank you very much. Okay. Representative Dugan, you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I do. Thank you, Ms. Grassel. Although actually, Mr. Topp might actually be able to weigh in on this as well. Last term, this committee went through a budget reduction analysis for each of these departments that we have jurisdiction over. The committee divided the departments up among the committee members. We prepared off two or three, examined each silo, went to the departments, made recommendations. Whatever happened to those? Do we know if they were incorporated into this budget?
It's my understanding that some of those were incorporated in last year's budget. I don't know if you have anything to add.
I don't know that information was particularly applied to us, mm-hmm. but certainly as the agencies would be putting together their legislative budget requests, having had those discussions in previous years, those would certainly be things that they would maybe be recommending as minimal reductions in terms of, you know, what they would have submitted to us this year that we would have included.
Thank you. And members, usually in the past, we've had an 8B, I think it's 8B5. Is that 8B? HB2 reductions. And we've done it as an exercise. It's been different this year because now some of those recommendations that came up from the agencies are being applied to the budget, the governor's budget that's being presented to it. So it is different. And this year it's not a draft. Sounds like some of those were incorporated and they're with the staff as we continue to work on the budget. So thank you. Thank you very much. I don't see any other questions. Okay, Representative Woodson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the opportunity. This one might apply to Mr. Grant, this question. In light of the statewide effort vaccination appointments that we are trying to schedule throughout the state, and I'm pretty sure the residents of the state of Florida are very grateful for the effort. However, I want to know, how can the FDS project to improve health and human services can contribute to that effort in order to make sure, in light of the automation and collaboration that Mr. Grant spoke about? Would that be a fair question?
Thank you very much. I think I'll go ahead and move on to CFO Grant's or CIO Grant's presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Appreciate it.
I'm very pleased that we have with us today CIO Grant to provide us an update on critical state technology issues and the implementation of the IT reorganization bill from last year. Welcome, CIO Grant. You can tell the members are very interested in your work, and we look forward to hear your report.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's the second consecutive time serving here in the House that people have tried to give me Jimmy Patronus's job, and for the record, I don't want it now, and I don't want it ever. I have quite a mission in front of me as it stands, but jokes aside, members, I really appreciate your time. I appreciate, Madam Chair, the opportunity to kind of introduce the Florida Digital Service. I think for those of you who have been around and understood the challenges historically, you know that those of you who know me know that I relish this fact. I have an impossible job, and I love that I have an impossible job because every day presents new challenges. The digital service, I believe, is the state's first ever opportunity to truly succeed in this space. And there are several reasons. We'll kind of touch on that here, walking through a quick presentation, hopefully saving time for questions. Having been in your seat, I'm sure you would rather not hear me talk to you about slides, but rather have the opportunity to get to your questions. So very briefly, the digital service, for those of you who are not aware, has a mission to deliver better government services and transparency to Floridians through design and technology. Somewhat of a broad mission, but is pretty clearly defined through statute, as well as some of the obligations we have through existing funded items that we are in the process of carrying out. Largely, we have six focuses at the Florida Digital Service. For any college football fans, I think you're used to following recruiting rankings and seeing how your coaches recruit. Business is no different. Organizations are no different. We are going to recruit the heck out of talent and try and figure out how we get elite talent here to come do some time in the state of Florida and help us advance the mission of the digital service. We will be organizing, we will be architecting, we will be innovating, we will be transforming, and we will be protecting. I'll touch on each of those as we walk through kind of briefly. But from a structure perspective, when you start thinking about the way that we organize issues at the digital service, much the same way that the Florida Leads budget would have policy verticals that would break or group different agencies into six different verticals, that's the way that we have aligned the digital service, such that we have really six silos or verticals when you think about focuses of subject matter. So there is government operations, there is healthcare, economic growth, the environment, education, public safety, and the law as the sixth. How we are organized, and we're in the middle of a little bit of a reorganization. Your staff, as I kind of mentioned earlier, is I'm biased, having spent a whole bunch of time with them over years working on policy in this space for the better part of a decade. But you have tremendous staff here in this committee that has been helpful all along to put us in a position where we have an opportunity to succeed. But we are currently in the midst of a little bit of a reorganization. For those of you who are kind of new to this space or just kind of paying attention to the space for the first time, I effectively have two budget entities that sit inside the Florida Digital Service. One is the Office of the State CIO. The other is the State Data Center. We will touch on both of those, but here you can see the way that we will be organizing the Florida Digital Service. The State Chief Information Officer, myself, entrusted with the service. You have the data management vertical. That is the state's chief data officer. You have cybersecurity, the state's CISO, chief information security officer. You have enterprise architecture. For the first time in our state's history, we employ an enterprise architect. That work is getting kicked off now to promote both the technical standards, the policies, and the governance necessary to make sure that interoperability becomes a reality. Service experience. This is something that is kind of a completely new invention or a drastic renovation of what has historically happened. Prior to my arrival, there was something called strategic planning and project management, kind of in one vertical. We have been exploring how we kind of strip that down a little bit to deliver both design, delivery, compliance, and partnerships out of the service experience world, such that any stakeholder that's engaging with the digital service knows where they can get the support and service necessary. And then you have the state data center. We'll touch on what's going on with the state data center as part of this quick presentation. I touched on it, recruiting. One of the things that you will see us do, you will hear us talk about a tour of duty. We have already been fortunate to kind of prove proof of concept, but we had 6 interns when I came on board. All 6 of those interns have now gone on to private sector placement, directly recruited without really a formal program. Largely on the RPA stuff we talked about earlier, the robotic process automation, the 6 of those interns straight out of their first job upon leaving us, their first job in the real world, so to speak, they're going to make an aggregate salary of right around $1.2 million. So the work they're doing through our program here in the state, delivering real change and tangible benefits to our constituents, is also highly lucrative for them when they leave. As I've said a number of times, if I had this job in the state of Texas, I would live in Austin, and it would be a little bit easier to recruit just with the infrastructure and assets that are in Austin, Texas, that might not be in Tallahassee, Florida. So there may be some unique challenges here in Florida. That doesn't mean that we can't make it work. We've just got to be a little bit more creative. And so the tour of duty is something that effectively recognizes that it would be hard to get people to up and relocate their lives and their career here to the city of Tallahassee. But they may be willing to come in and do a tour of duty that is either mission-focused at the shortest sprint, maybe a 6, 9, 12-month mission to actually come in on a project to ultimately get placed in the private sector coming out of that, or a 2, 3, 4-year tour of duty. Put another way, in order to recruit top talent, we're going to need to embrace churn and some turnover that is scheduled, it is intentional, and it also represents kind of from the ground up, so to speak, colleges, trade schools, universities, programs, upskill work. Those are the kind of fellows or interns that would be coming into the program, and then at the same time, we would be recruiting stakeholders in the state of Florida and around the country to partner to provide mentors, right? So how do we get talent that would never otherwise come work with the state of Florida because we can't pay what their current employer pays. Perhaps a tour of duty model will give us access. We continue to see strong interest in that, but I would stress to you that when we look at the recruiting effort, 2 major focuses. One is establishing the policies necessary to implement a tour of duty model, and then simultaneously aligning the jobs and the position descriptions that we're seeking with what is normal in the private sector. From an organization perspective, the state data catalog is something that we are obligated to have completed by October 1. We expect to have some news for you here very, very quickly on the awarding of that contract. This legislature has previously allocated funds for us to go get a data catalog and then subsequently to implement the data catalog. The data catalog, you notice those 5 questions up there, well, 6 now that we've added one, sorry, on the confidential exemption side from the task force. But those questions really hone in on what do we have and where is it, such that we can do 2 things. On the kind of perspective side, we can build intelligently and make sure that interoperability the way Representative Goff-Marcel was asking about can actually happen. And then simultaneously, we can protect. If you think about the absurd notion of telling you to protect a physical asset, a person, if I didn't tell you the person's name or what they look like or where they're located, you would certainly laugh at the notion of having to protect it. In large realities, that's what we're having to do with Florida's digital assets right now. And so getting some inventory and insights into that is critical to our success. The data catalog and the data dictionary are kind of the first step in that direction. That will be a very collaborative process, establishing work groups with customers, partners, other agencies to make sure that as we're doing the work, both here with the data catalog and as well with the enterprise architecture, that we're incorporating the needs that, those teams have. Project management, this is an area that I would stress. You know, I'm a big believer that if you don't confront the realities of problems, you're never going to solve them. This is an area where I would suggest that myself, my team at the Florida Digital Service, you and your role as the legislature, both as the sole appropriators, but also in, the ability to set policy tied to those appropriations, continue to get better at what project management, so to speak, looks like. I'm a big believer that the objective, at least the policies I worked on, the objective of project management or IVNV and the different tools that we spend taxpayer dollars on, my intention was always that that increased the likelihood of the program's success, that the deliverable was more likely to arrive under budget and ahead of time. Candidly speaking, as I've come in over the first 6 months or so, almost 6 months of my appointment, I've started to see that, we have a lot of improvement to be made there. The service experience is something that reflects that. And so I think what you'll see is a lot of work to make sure that we're providing value, more so than just kind of checking the boxes, or as I would suggest, there's a little bit of the what I call the nanny-nanny boo-boo disease sometimes in the oversight, compliance, and project management world, where, people may be more inclined to, kind of write the citation or the ticket rather than to say, hey, let me help you solve that problem. And so getting the service experience right is something that is critical on that front. Couple of other updates for anybody who is super in the weeds in this space. You will know that the data center is something that has been, quite frankly, a challenge for the predecessor agencies and, my predecessors as the state CIO. I'm not sure what number state CIO I am, but I know that everyone that came before me had challenges tied to the state data center from the inception of the state data center. We are in the middle of outsourcing the state data center, so I would respectfully advise that there's a lot of questions I can't answer on that because I am not in the room and I am in kind of quote-unquote the black box on that, but know that outsourcing the state data center to a company that is in the business of managing a data center is a big priority. It helps get us towards where we should be, in my opinion, as a state, and quite frankly, where the, House and this committee has largely led over the recent past and, the governor's very clear directives and expectations of, me. And so that procurement is underway. We expect that procurement to be finalized with an award by mid-2021. I would suggest that, that's probably a topic that would come before this committee as, things move. And Madam Chair, that was a kind of a speed reading version to try and make sure we left time for member questions. So I appreciate your indulgences.
Thank you. They take the state, the technology part of the committee title very seriously. And I believe Ms. Woodson, you have a question?
Okay. My question had to do with the newly vaccination drive that we are trying to get everyone vaccinated in the state of Florida. And like I mentioned, it's, you know, the residents of Florida are grateful for having the vaccination effort to get everyone in light of COVID. My question has to do with FDS project that is really to improve health and human services data. So how can they contribute to that major effort that we have in the state in light of the challenges that we are facing with the scheduling of the vaccination?
So I would like to interject. I wanted to get Jamie up because I know he's been working on the on these systems. Mm-hmm. The ACA system is not under our purview, although our CIO has been working on that somewhat, if you could help with that question.
Yes, ma'am. So appreciate your question, Representative. The interoperability efforts in the healthcare space are something entirely different. There are work groups that are happening. In fact, there was one today that I missed in order to be down here today. Notwithstanding that that is an entirely different thing, vaccine distribution is an ongoing thing, and your concerns are heard. What I would make sure everybody understands is kind of the workflow of how vaccines happen. So every Tuesday, the federal government, which is exclusively in control of the supply of the vaccine, allocates to each state an amount of vaccine that that state can order. Under our governor's leadership, we are one of the states who have ordered our maximum allotment of vaccine every single week. Many states are actually not ordering their full allotment of vaccines, which quite frankly, in my opinion, is offensive. I am proud of the fact that this administration has week after week after week said we will take every single vaccine you can give us. What we did at the Florida Digital Service, recognizing that we were not going to have kind of a centralized, top-down, one-size-fits-all approach to every local government, was offer first a pre-registration system. So myvaccine.fl.gov was launched a couple of Fridays ago. That gave every Floridian the ability to get in line reliably and not have to vaccine hunt all over the state to wonder if they were in line. Every single county emergency manager is on a number of calls inside the EOC building every week. My team is currently housed on the second floor of the Sadowski building adjacent to EOC and to Florida Department of Emergency Management. And so what we did by launching that website was give everybody the ability to get in line. We have also offered every single county at no charge to them the ability to use the automated scheduling service that we have provided. Whether or not they choose to do that is entirely up to them. You have about half of the state's population right now that has state-supported sites that are leaning on the infrastructure that we help design at the direction of the Department of Emergency Management. You have a number of counties who are still trying to use things like Eventbrite or other systems and choosing to do things on their own. Even those counties who do that have the ability to leverage the pre-registration list so they can come to us and actually get a number of names that are in line every time they get vaccines distributed. Couple of rules in designing that solution that myself, the Department of Health, and Emergency Management all kind of agreed on. We're not going to be canceling appointments when we hand people off between System A and System B. And perhaps more importantly, we're not going to offer an appointment if there's not a vaccine to go with it. What a lot of local governments decided to do was just to schedule out appointments for 6 months or 5 months and put hundreds of thousands of people under the belief that they actually had an appointment when they didn't. And so we are operating on a very quick, rapid process every 7 days so that when the allocation decisions come down from the federal government and then the Department of Emergency Management and the administration distribute the vaccines to different counties, we stand prepared to take the number of orders, i.e. how many appointments at what location. That's something our team working on around the clock.
So I want to thank you. This is another thing that I knew that CIO Grant had been working on this, but just to give you an idea of how big a ship he's trying to turn, even though he's only reporting to us on part of his mm-hmm. duties, that he's engaged in many things and that interoperability that we all have been hoping for. And I'm really grateful you couldn't be here a moment too soon. I know they've been keeping you very busy. Did you have some questions, Ranking Member?
Yes, thank you, Chair. You answered my question pretty much. I noticed that in our other presentations, we're gonna have a lot of new technology that was very much needed because it was back from the 1970s. And are you kind of coordinating those efforts with all the different agencies?
It's a fantastic question, Madam Chair. I just wanna make sure. So I would encourage you to think about the path forward kind of in a binary approach with respect to your question, and it's frustrating for me. The fastest progress I can make is on prospective appropriations, so things we're doing in the future. The enterprise architecture, as passed in law last year and as getting kicked off by our team to actually document through the rulemaking process in coordination with all of the stakeholders, will actually set the kind of standards and specifications for what we build, how we buy, what that looks like, such that moving forward, things we buy can operate with the ecosystem. I would suggest to you that the amount of money I would have to ask this committee for or the legislature for in order to retrofit all of the decisions and buying decisions of the past would be a staggering amount of money. And so what we are trying to do at the Digital Service is stay as lean as possible to make as much interoperability happen as possible. And so really really the two major areas we can impact in the short term are our statutory responsibilities with oversight of existing large spends, so north of $10 million for a legislative project or $25 million for a cabinet project, and then ultimately the enterprise architecture. The publication of the enterprise architecture, which will be an iterative ongoing thing, when that is first published, we will have made more progress, at least moving forward, than probably the last 20 years in Florida's history with respect to interoperability. Unfortunately, it won't magically fix everything in the past, but it will set the framework for everything moving forward.
Yes, Representative Henson, you're recognized.
I think I have had the pleasure of hearing this presentation in the Joint Audit Committee. Yet, I'm still trying to understand some of the workings of this design. So, from what I understand, this particular department is designing and creating architecture for new technologies and making them more operable. That's what I'm thinking I'm understanding, as well as, so I guess since I hear what you're saying about the vaccination system and how you've been able to help Health and Human Services design and create a system for making appointments and getting in line, is it possible for you to do a similar type design for some of the problems we're having with unemployment systems and other areas that we may be having problems with? I hope you understand what I'm trying to say.
You're yes, right. Ma'am, I got you, and I appreciate your question. There's a few different answers there. I think there were a couple questions. I want to make sure I get to all of them. I would suggest that the best way to understand what I'm responsible for is the slide that's behind me or in front of me, depending on which way you're looking, as far as who my direct reports are. So the state's chief data officer reports to me, how we aggregate data, how we use data. The state's chief information security officer, cybersecurity, reports to me, so protection of that data. Enterprise architecture, which is the framework for interoperability, that individual reports to me. Service experience, which gets to kind of the project management and oversight, that reports to me. And then the state data center reports to me. So on paper, that is what my job theoretically, hypothetically is. In reality, I get called into all sorts of fires all day, every day. What I would suggest to you at the Department of Economic Opportunity is that, A, we're very fortunate to have Mr. Eagle over there. He's not only a tremendous leader, but somebody who understands the policy space and who immediately reached out to us and said, how can we collaborate together? So they had actually been working down the pathway. We collaborated with them on the definition of a request for report, kind of post-mortem, in looking back at how that system was procured, how it was designed. That report is something that Director Eagle has asked for that should be coming, and I would stress that any kind of design or implementation or technological decisions prior to that report would be malpractice. I would lastly close by saying that with any issue, we kind of stand ready to be deployed when we get deployed, agnostic of where that may be. But I would suggest that I am incredibly I very much enjoyed my time in those chairs. I am very glad that I am no longer in those chairs from a perspective of policy and budgeting. My job is now to execute and do. The legislature, having the sole constitutionally designated authority over the purse, has the ability to fund whatever it would like to fund in the GAA. And should those things be funded, we will certainly do the job that's expected of us, both by the administration, the legislature, and our constituents.
Thank you. Representative Dugan.
Thank you. Welcome back to the Florida House. Quick question, in terms of your recruiting difficulties, would it make a difference if your office were located somewhere else in the state, like Jacksonville?
Know your audience, Jamie, know your audience. Well, yes, it would. What I would suggest to you is that very clearly a roadmap that gets us into a center of excellence model. I would submit to you that the first thing we need to do at the Digital Service is get the Center of Excellence from a programmatic perspective in place, and that's largely what I've covered. When you think about hubs like Jacksonville, Miami, Tampa, and Orlando, they are all leading in different ways. They all have some significant resources that I would tell you that one of kind of my definitions for success in my journal is that when my time is done, there are some hubs around the state that are aligned to a Center of Excellence model that says, hey, I might not have to have people kind of physically located in Tallahassee, but that we can have some of those hubs of excellence. I'll brag on my hometown a little bit. CENTCOM's there, SOCOM's there. So when you think about the resources that Tampa has, Orlando, Miami, Jacksonville, even Pensacola, you see some tremendous resources around the state. My goal is to make sure that the Center of Excellence model works, and the best way I would define that is that we will not be the fifth tech office to end up in the graveyard. As I have told my team, we're gonna succeed. Every other path has been tried. We get to do it aggressively with some freedom to know that our job is to succeed, but I think that's the kind of thing that points to success when you start to see hubs around the state because we've actually done a good enough job establishing the heartbeat of the organization.
Well, thank you, CIO Grant. You can tell you've left us wanting more, and we hope to have you again sometime soon to help us with, see the vision and hear about your progress. And we are very grateful. You've come in midstream, and we're really grateful to have you there to help us with this. And thank you, members, for your questions and your interest.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee.
Members, I'd encourage you continue to ask questions and devote time learning about the budget of our agencies. This will conclude our committee agenda. Is there any further business before the committee? Seeing none, Representative Fisher moves we rise.